Welcome to the Gregory Neesmith Show, a special delivery of underdog stuff. It's also a special mix of politics and personal development stuff, too, for underdogs. And we do it live every week at the home of the Gregory Neesmith Show on WHCR 90.3 FM, the voice of Harlem. Shout out to all the Harlemites and folks in New York City and all the underdogs around the globe who check in every Sunday live from noon to 2 p.m. Appreciate you. And as always, to take you on that journey, you have your host, Gregory Neesmith, certified coach, consultant, entrepreneur, content creator, a bunch of stuff. But when it's all said and done, I'm really into exploring how as underdogs, we get our swagger back in life, in business, and in politics. Let's get into it. Episode 81. Done this 81 weeks. Pretty much in a row, too. 81 times. Today was on my mind a couple topics. One, that all women are crazy. All women, crazy. You know, all women crazy. It's one thing on my mind. The other are a few other matters of the heart. And lastly, the third thing on my mind today is political Plato. Political Plato. You know, Plato, like the Greek philosopher Plato. It may sound like an eclectic mix, but I promise you, it'll all make sense before we get out of here. Let's go on the journey together. All women are crazy, other matters at heart, and political Plato. Let's see. Where to start? All women are crazy. You know, crazy like, why don't women understand that all men cheat? All men cheat, right? So, why are you acting all crazy if I or some other man cheats on you? Crazy. Women want me or other men to show emotion. Don't they know that I'm a man? Stoic. I'm tough. I don't show emotion. You want me to be emotionally available? You're crazy. Again, all women are crazy. Telling me I should see a therapist. Who are you, crazy woman, to tell me I should see a therapist when I'm thinking that you can handle all my baggage for free? Pay a therapist. Thought that was your job. Do I cook? Do you cook? Or am I bugging? Why are you being all crazy? Now, I'd be fronting if I said that I had never mumbled the phrase, said the phrase out loud, but thought to myself that, yeah, all women are crazy, emotional. Demanding. Just want too much. Expecting perfection. I'm not going to get on the air and say that I've never thought that. I might have, you know, thought that once, twice, three, four, five, six, seven, 8 million times. I did. I'll get back to that in a second, though. And I probably don't talk about it enough, but I'm a certified business and life coach. And part of that journey includes learning about myself, about the world, about people, how we react to things, how we see ourselves, you know, learning about people. And one of the things I learned in my program, which for short I call IPEC, but that stands for Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching. It's an accredited coaching program, and it's a whole lot of work that goes into it to get to this point where I'm at. Shout out to all my IPEC coaches and people. And one of the things we learned is this whole idea of something called energy leadership levels. It's this idea of, from a behavior standpoint, something happens, we react. Something happens, we react. And we interact with each other, with ourselves, with the world, based on certain energy levels. And those behaviors that we've learned through every moment of our life come to life in some way in each moment. And the cool thing is, because it's behavior, it's something that can evolve. So I may see the world one way today, and then a year from now, I could see it in another way. So the cool thing is, I am who I am right now, but I could be something different going forward. And so these energy levels are broken up into two types of energy. There's one called catabolic, which basically means it's the energy that I have or you have, that I see the world in a way that things are bad, or that things are a bunch of conflict, or things are I win or they lose, or things are struggle. The world's out to get me. It's a lot of like heavy and draining emotion, and I see the world as if like I'm gonna win or they're gonna lose, or that basically I may even see the world sometimes as if I'm a loser now. I might as well just check out, give up, be apathetic. You know, kind of like how a lot of us are with our politicians these days. So that's one type of energy, catabolic. And stick with me. I know that I just kicked off the show calling all women crazy, and I kind of didn't close the loop on that. I get it. Bear with me. I'll get back to that in a second. And then the other type of energy is what's called anabolic. The kind that instead of breaks, it builds. Instead of checking out, you check in. It's the type of energy that we react and interact with the world in a way where we say, I'm going to care for myself. I'm going to care for others. I'm going to be responsible. I'm going to forgive people. I'm going to look for how can we all win. It's anabolic. It's positive. It feels lighter. You got a little bit more pep in your step when you're on the anabolic side of energy. And when you're on the catabolic, a little rougher, without going into too much detail. And there's seven levels. The first two levels are what's considered that challenging energy, and levels 3 through 7 are considered what is the more empowering, energetic, high energy levels. So now back to the all women are crazy. So yeah, I used to think that all women were crazy. And instead of building something good, it's probably doing more breaking. Breaking hearts, breaking promises, breaking relationships. And there's a lot of stuff with that, right? A lot of conflict, a lot of anger, struggle, a lot of lemonade. That was my attempt at a beehive. Beyonce reference there. A lot of struggle, a lot of pain, a lot of disappointment. But I was lucky. A few years ago, someone challenged me to look at a couple things about my belief that all women were crazy. It's a very catabolic place to be, right, in terms of energy. So I had to kind of challenge my interpretations. Were all women wired to be crazy? Or were they reacting to me and my actions? Were they all drama queens? Or was I a drama king? I mean, both could be true, But one puts the onus on everybody else. And one puts the onus on the person that we get to look at and looks back at us when we look in the mirror. And it turns out that as I stopped to ponder it all, that the one person that all these women that I supposedly call crazy, the one thing that seemed to show up and be in common with each and every one of them, the same trait, the same thing that they all had in common, was me. And I'll be honest, when that moment happened, there's a good thing and a bad thing that happens. The bad thing that happens is I realize I could no longer keep blaming some of the women that I dated for the way things had worked out. And it sounded so much better to call them drama queens than it did to call me a drama king. But there was some good news, because then once I realized that I could take responsibility for some of the messiness that had happened over the years, then that means if I was the one who was instigating it or creating a space for it, then that meant that I could also create a space where it didn't have to exist anymore. Where it was already true that they likely weren't drama queens, but now I could actually choose to not be the drama king. And there's something kind of cool about taking personal responsibility for my past so that I could have things work out differently going forward. But the truth is, you got your version of this too. You may not think that all women are crazy, but you may have your own version of it, right? My friends are bugging. They never invite me out anymore. Every boss I've had in my career be tripping. My parents don't love me. They never come to visit me. All the men out here ain't sugar, honey, iced tea. You see what I did there? It's, you know, public radio. I can't curse. So, you know, sugar, S, honey, H, ice, I, you know the rest. And oh, by the way, I'm not here to say that you didn't have a boss or two that might have been tripping. I'm not even here to say that some of the women I dated weren't crazy. Some of my friends know, maybe one or two of them actually were. I'm not here to say that some of your friends aren't bugging when they don't invite you out and that maybe they got a problem and you don't. I'm not here to say that you've never had some bad people or bad situations in your life. But even in the cases where I might have been dating somebody who was kind of crazy, when I'm taking ownership of it, I still get to choose how long I stayed, even if they were crazy. Even if your boss, one of them, is bugging, tripping, you get to choose how long you stay. But more often than not, a lot of times they tripping because you ain't doing your work. Women ain't being crazy because they crazy. It's because I'm doing things that generate conflict, anger, struggle, disappointment, lemonade. So now what? You're looking in the mirror right now, realizing that some of your situation actually is you, not them. Well, one of the first places to start is, can you forgive yourself, forgive them for what's happened up until now? What you gonna do going forward? And last but not least, if there's some mess to be cleaned up, clean it up. Acknowledge that you were messing up. Apologize. Forgive. It's good for you. And later in the show, we'll talk about why forgiveness is hard, but also why it could save your life. I did say we talk about other matters of the heart. And I also meant it literally and figuratively. You know, I often say, I have this belief that we take ourselves wherever we go. And so if I'm blaming people in one part of my life and not taking ownership of it, I'm probably doing it in other places too. I might be doing it with my dreams. I might be doing it with my family. I might be doing it with politics. I might be checking out instead of checking in, breaking things instead of building things. I think about Donald Trump from time to time. You think about Donald Trump from time to time? POTUS, President of the United States. I've been in a catabolic energy state before, where I've either been all about the conflict, all about the blame, or even worse, sometimes I just get so apathetic and lethargic that I just check out, that I just be like, I don't care. I'm gonna just sit on my couch, watch TV, and just be mad. I've been there too. So not only was I at times in a bad place when it came to relationships, but I've been in a bad place when it's come to politics too. I think back to coming of age. So in the 90s, at the start of the 90s, I was 15. At the end of the 90s, I was 25. So that means I went through some three big life stages of my life in the great 90s. Also, shout out to 90s hip hop, by the way. I went from high school to college years to post-college years, all in the 90s, 15 years old to 25 years old. You do the math and you know how old I am right now. Shout out to all the Gen Xers. And I remember voting 2000. So 2025, which means my first election that I could have voted in would have been 4 years earlier at 21 years old, which would have been 96, which I believe was Clinton going for his second term. And I'm not quite sure if I voted in that election or not, but I remember going out, and I think my first presidential election that I voted in was Gore versus Bush. Continue on the legacy of Clinton. The 90s.coms, the internet, the World Wide Web. Not much conflict or wars that the U.S. was involved in. Economies going up. I mean, they were also locking up a lot of my people, too. The mid-90s crime bill. Clinton, I haven't forgotten. But the 90s, you know, heading into the new century. And remember, the biggest thing we used to worry about was everything going to reset properly? Remember that Y2K? it seems so silly now, but literally, I think our biggest worry was like, yo, is my bank account going to have zeros in it? Will my watch reset properly? What does 00 look like on my, you know, stuff? It's our biggest thing, Y2K. And I remember going out to vote. And I was like, this is cool, you know. America, democracy, votes count. Cast my vote. My ancestors fought for this. Less than 40 years ago, my people weren't free. It was a crime to be black in America up until 1960s. I mean, it's probably still a crime to be black in America, but that's a whole separate conversation. And so I go out to vote. I'll disclose, you know, I voted for Gore. I lean to the left. I think if I had to describe myself, I'd probably say libertarian, but, you know, I lean to the left. And I remember that there was this dispute in Florida and they were trying to count the votes. And all I remember is it felt like, I want to say one of the judges in Florida made a decision about how the votes should be counted. And in a way, it landed on me as if they appointed George Bush to be president of the United States. He didn't even win the popular vote on top of that. And at 25, I'll be honest, I didn't really know or get like what electoral college meant. I was just like, yo, the dude I voted for got more votes and some dude in a robe appointed the other guy president. This doesn't work for me. So I checked out. I was like, fine then. Take my stuff and go home. So 2004 came. I believe it was Bush versus Kerry. I can't believe John Kerry was a person back then. Anyway. And I didn't vote. I checked out. Instead of checking in. Can you relate? You ever get all bad energy and start to react to yourself, others in the world in terms of just checking out? I didn't vote in 2004 because I was pissed about what happened in 2000. And then I got back in the game, 2008. Voted for the brother, the man, the myth, the legend, Barack Obama. My goodness, 2008. Crazy. And then all the brinksmanship and race became a more vocal topic, right? Race hasn't gone away. It's never gone away here in America, but became part of the conversation in a louder way than it was at the start of the century. And so I got checked out again. 2012, I'm like, politics suck. These politicians suck. Vote doesn't matter. So I sat out. And 2016 came, and I'm like, I'm getting back in again. Check in. And I say all that to say, it's natural. You're not alone. If sometimes life comes at you and one of your reactions is to choose to be in conflict, blame, anger, struggle, like when I used to think that all women were crazy. Or it's okay that when life comes at you and things get stressful, it's okay if sometimes you're like, I give up. Throwing up the white flag. I'm checking out. I'm not going to date anymore, or I'm not going to work anymore. I'm not going to vote anymore. I've been there. Just as an example of presidential elections, off and on, off and on, off and on, since I could vote. But I bring it up today because I actually believe it's better when we check in terms of check out. I think it's better when we build things instead of break them. And that brings me to today's politics. Let's talk about today's politics. And are you checking in or checking out? Are you building? Are you breaking? I want to make the case that it's better to check in than to check out, better to build than to break. Because this guy, I know, has some of you wanting to break instead of build, and once you're having you want to check out instead of check in.
We're doing very well. I love it. We are doing very well, and we're doing very well, probably as well as anybody has ever done with Russia. And there's been no president ever as tough as I have been on Russia. All you have to do is look at the numbers, look at what we've done, look at sanctions, look at ambassadors not there, look, unfortunately, at what happened in Syria recently. And I think President Putin knows that better than anybody, certainly a lot better than the media. He understands it, and he's not happy about it, and he shouldn't be happy about it, because there's never been a president as tough on Russia as I have been. Okay, thank you very much.
Doesn't that make you want to check out? We just letting anybody be president these days. I get it. I believe 100 million eligible American voters did not vote on November 8th, 2016. Didn't vote. They checked out. Midterm elections coming up. I hope that many people don't check out. I want them to check in. Because when we check out, or when we break things instead of build them, political Plato happens. The Greek philosopher Plato, who I don't think I've ever quoted Plato before. So this is like a first for me. And I don't even know if I'll ever quote him again. But his quote caught my attention, because I think it ties nicely to, are we checking in? Are we checking out? Are we building? Are we breaking? Are we forgiving ourselves and others up until this point? And then what are we going to take responsibility for and do something different going forward? Plato says, one of the penalties of refusing to participate in politics is that we end up being governed by your inferiors. What Plato just say? Say it again one more time. Say it for the people in the back. One of the penalties of refusing to participate in politics is that you end up being governed by your inferiors. Plato, the Greek philosopher. Raise your hand if you feel like you're being governed by some inferiors right now. Shout out to Plato. I didn't really study Plato, but I love that quote. It's a good one. One of the penalties of refusing to participate in politics is that you end up being governed by your inferiors.
People came to me, Dan Coats came to me and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be.
I just played that as like as an example of a potential inferior that you could be governed by. But you know what I love? I love that there are some people out there who, instead of checking out, are choosing to check in. It's cool. There's been a lot more women running for office this year. And a lot of them mostly on the Democrat side, but still a lot of folks running that are women. I believe the latest count is that when it comes to folks who have filed to run as candidates in some of the primaries that have been happening so far this spring and summer, 350 Democratic women have filed to run for the House of Representatives. 118 Republican women have signed up to run in the House of Representatives. And so far, year to date, about 105 women on the Democratic side have won primaries, and about 25 women on the House of Representatives side have won primaries too. Checking in instead of checking out. Yo, shout out to all the women underdogs out there who are like, yo, we are tired of being governed by our inferiors. I'm tired of it too. I appreciate it. In 2017, there was a poll that asked if the country would be governed worse or governed better if more women were in political office. The overall answer was 64% of people said things would be better if we had more women in office. Unfortunately, if you look at political parties, only 36% of Republicans believe that things would be better with more women in office compared to 83% of Democrats. Yo, the Republicans just be, I just don't. So that means almost two thirds of Republicans think things are much better when there's folks like this in office.
People came to me, Dan Coats came to me and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be.
I think that, of course, government would be better if it was more diverse across a lot of spectrums, race, gender, sexuality, country of origin, educational background, ideology. Diversity's tough. We suck at diversity, difference. But countless studies have shown diversity works. You want to have a winning team, get some folks that are diverse, you get to a better place. It'll be hard in the beginning, but once you get through those hard times, things are always better. So yeah, of course our government would be better with a different mix of men and women in it than we have today. Of course it would, even though it looks like a majority of Republicans can't see that. I said we talk about other matters of the heart. And I meant that literally. Because one of the things I've learned on this journey about building instead of breaking, checking in instead of checking out, is that forgiveness is key to moving on. Key. And so I thought it'd be cool to at least share, like, what are some of the benefits of forgiving folks? Forgiving yourself so that you can move forward and check in instead of check out, build instead of break. Forgiveness. Why should you forgive yourself and other people? Well, for one, it's one of the keys of moving from checking out to checking back in, from breaking things, building things, moving from catabolic energy into anabolic energy. It's one of the steps. And there's some research about forgiveness is a good thing. There was this recent Huffington Post article about why forgiveness is good for your health. That was the title of the article. And it said, forgiving unconditionally can mean a longer lifespan. People who practice conditional forgiveness, which is only forgiving if the other, which is only forgiving if the other person says sorry first or promises not to do something again, that person may be more likely to die earlier compared to the person who forgives unconditionally. This is because the person who practices conditional forgiveness is less likely to forgive because people aren't always going to say sorry. I had to realize that one of the most arrogant and crazy things that I could do in this world is think that I can control the outcome of what other people do and what they think. So if you only forgiven when people say they sorry, then you're going to be waiting for a long time. Well, actually, in this case, you won't be waiting for a long time because your lifespan will be shorter. And that's, you know. Forgiveness also gets you out of that angry mode. When you, I, we, when we're chronically angry, we have higher blood pressure, increased heart rate. First, when we forgive, it helps us de-stress. Not forgiving someone is associated with more anger, arousal, sadness, and feelings of being out of control. Who wants that? The world is tough enough. I don't want to also sign up for having my own world being tough too. It was shown that someone holding a grudge had higher physiological activity, such as facial muscle tension, heart rate, blood pressure, sweating, as compared to those that forgave. And speaking of matters of the heart, your heart will thank you. Forgiveness has been shown to have effects on lowering blood pressure. Your heart will be better. Literally, stop breaking hearts. Building stuff. Stop fighting with folks. Give, move on, take responsibility, have it be a different way. Literally, your heart will thank you. Basically, when it's all said and done, from what I've read, forgiveness helps your health across the board. Studies have shown that forgiveness is associated with health measures, including how many medications people take, their sleep quality, their fatigue. The health benefits of forgiveness seem to come largely from its ability to reduce negative affects. And then one other one I want to read from this article that caught my attention. Researchers found that when you need forgiveness, making amends with the person you wronged can better help you forgive yourself. People who asked for forgiveness were found to be more likely to feel it was okay to forgive themselves. Making amends gives us permission to let go. I just want to pause here for a second on this one. Because I didn't really get this one for most of my life. This idea that forgiveness is helpful and important for me, not just for the other person. Quick aside, as many of you know, I was in foster care for a few years and adopted. And 4 years ago, I went and searched for and found my biological parents and have now since met them and some of my other biological family. And I remember having feelings of anger, being pissed at my biological parents. Thoughts like, yo, why couldn't y'all figure it out? Why did some of my other siblings get to stay and I didn't? making me feel unlovable, not special. They say knowing our ancestry is such an important thing, right? We got companies that specialize in helping you do ancestry.com because there's something empowering, something calming about knowing where we come from. And because they couldn't figure it out, I didn't know my most immediate and most intimate ancestry, which is like, who were the people that brought me to this planet? Pissed. Never going to forgive them. Who's somebody right now that you're never going to forgive? And then through the help of things like therapy and access to coaching and Googling things and reading articles, and there's an interesting thing that I found out, that some of me holding on to that anger, some of it had nothing to do with them. Because what I realized is that some of their choices when they were in their 20s, that included being part of my life story, that led to some of the events that would happen in foster care and adoption. By me holding on to that anger and not forgiving them, it meant in a sinister, self-sabotaging way that I got to hold on to some mistakes that I made in my 20s and 30s that I wasn't going to forgive myself for. Misery loves company, right? Making amends helps you forgive yourself. One of the benefits about forgiveness, from a HuffPost article, ways forgiveness is good for your health. And so I wanted to stick here for a second because this was like mind blown for me. That there's a magic in the moment when I finally realized that my biological parents were doing the best they could at the time. And that it was okay to feel anger and hurt and disappointment. And then it was okay to forgive. And take responsibility for the fact that if I still at 42 years old feel unlovable and not special, that's my issue now, and I get to unlearn. And I get to take responsibility for, do I want a relationship with them now or don't I? And I do. But this is where the magic happened, is that learning to forgive them also meant that I had to learn how to forgive myself for things that I did in my 20s and 30s when I was doing the best that I could at the time, even if it wasn't enough. And so my challenge to you is, if you're holding on to something about somebody else, take a moment to think about, what are some things you're holding on to about yourself? And I'm not quite sure which one gets to come first, whether you forgive yourself or whether you forgive somebody else. But what I do know is one or the other will help one or the other. And now you'll get the opportunity to get some of those benefits of forgiveness, like lower blood pressure and longer lifespan, because forgiving ourselves can also be key to forgiving others, or forgiving others can unlock the opportunity to forgive ourselves and then move on and have something different. Shout out to my biological parents. I love you. Wouldn't have gotten here without you. And shout out to my parents, my angels, my parents, my mom, my dad, Henry and Hallie Neesmith. I wouldn't have done it any other way than the way we've been able to do it together. I love you. And there's not a single person on this planet that I'll ever meet or know that can stop y'all from being my parents, my mom and dad, and my angels. So what are you going to forgive yourself for today? And I say today for a reason, because I don't want you to wait till next week, next month, next year. That ain't promised. And according to some of these health indicators, it could be life or death, depending on how long you wait. And Christine says, I forgive myself for putting myself down as a teenager and young adult when I should be my best friend and cheerleader. Christine, thank you for sharing that. As a lot of you know, I'm working on a book, a curriculum, some workshops around this idea of the 10 swagger back commandments, how underdogs get our swagger back in life and in business. And one of the swagger back commandments working name is, one of them is called stop kidding around. And it's this idea of there's things we learned as kids, there's things we did as kids to survive, things we thought about ourselves, about the people around us, about the world, that they helped us get through our childhood, but they don't help us now. They did what they needed to do back then, but something different could work for us in a way that could have us feeling good, feeling like we're our own best friend and our own cheerleader. So shout out to Christine. That's a deep point. And some future episodes will be dedicated to how we stop kidding around, which is this idea of what are the things we get to unlearn from our childhood so that we can get our swagger back in our adulthood. Shout out to Christine. Appreciate you. With that, it's time for the big finish of the show. Name that underdog.
Dedication that I always have in my life, and I just like, I'm gonna get to this job one way or the other.
I didn't, my car went down and I didn't have a ride. The ride I had called out on me, said he couldn't take me, so I had to find an alternative route to get to work. So I decided to walk.
Name that underdog. Those past two clips are that of Walter Carr. That's Walter Carr, C-A-R-R, who is a young Birmingham College student. His car broke down the night before he was supposed to start his new job, and so he decided to walk to work, which at first may not sound that impressive to you until I tell you that the walk to work was about 20 miles in distance. Carr is a recent high school graduate and someone who dreams of joining the U.S. Marines. He both needed the job that he was going to walk to and also wanted it too. It was with the Bellhop's Moving Company. So with No access to a car, given that his car broke down the night before he's going to start his new job. He chose to walk. Instead of checking out, he checked in. Instead of breaking promises, he was going to build on. And they said he got to work around 4 a.m. that next day. And it caught the attention, his resilience, him taking personal responsibility for having things work out. Instead of blaming the world or thinking that the world is out to get him, he's like, I'm going to go do it anyway. I'm going to make it happen. The Bellhop CEO, Luke Marklin, heard about this story. And the CEO of Bellhop drove from Tennessee down to where Walter Carr was, saying that he wanted to meet Carr and personally thank him. And the cool thing is, when they met, Luke, the CEO of Bellhops, gave Walter a 2014 Ford Escape. And so now Walter has some national attention and acknowledged for his dedication, and also now has a new car, 2014 Ford Escape, so he won't have to walk to work the next day. And this is, you know, very cool story. Just a little bit more background on it. Walter Carr's car, ironic, right? Carr broke down, his last name Carr. Walter Carr broke down the day before his new job. He decided to walk 20 miles to work. He was picked up by a couple police officers that were concerned about him when they saw him walking on a road late at night. They took him to breakfast and they took him to the house where he was supposed to be at that morning to help the owners move. The owners of that house, one of them named Jenny Lamley, she was so shocked and surprised and proud of his work ethic that she started sharing his story. As I mentioned, the CEO also took notice and gave Walter a car. And they thanked him for his dedication, determination, and work ethic. I also believe that, I think I read somewhere where there was a GoFundMe page and some other stuff started for him. So just a cool example of someone who, you know, had life happen to them, right? Car breaks down, and instead of checking out, they checked in. Instead of breaking things, they went on and built, took responsibility, and found a way to make stuff happen. Shout out to Walter Carr. All right. Last but not least, our next Name That Underdog. I'm going to play the clip, which also is related to the movie Black Panther. Has me just randomly thinking, all-time classic for the culture. Do you think Coming to America or Black Panther? Which one would you pick? Black Panther turned 30 years old this year. Coming to America turned 30, I believe, years old this year, which still feels timeless even after all that time. And obviously Black Panther is still a baby, but you know, for the culture, which one you picking? All-time classic, Coming to America, Black Panther. But let's play this next clip, Name That Underdog. First one was Walter Carr, shout out to him. Can you name this underdog?
How'd you get in Black Panther?
My agent, Cindy Butler from I Submit Talent, sent me this thing for an audition. And I said, there is no way I'm gonna be in no comic strip at my age. And she's very persistent. I really have to give her credit, because she said, Miss Dorothy, you can do this. I said, no, I can't. But my grandson came over, Niles Wardell. He said, Grandma, you always talk about stepping out on nothing. Let your faith take you there. He said, now, how come you don't do it yourself? I said, what do you mean? He said, either you're going to step out there or you're going to shut up. I went to the computer, and every day I practiced Mandela.
Step out there or shut up. Be governed by your inferiors or get out there and run for office like a bunch of women have been doing so far this year. Get out there, shut up. Name that underdog. You know who that was? You know who that is? It's Dorothy Steele. and she began her acting career when she was 88 years old. That's not a typo. I'm not misspeaking. I didn't read it wrong. You heard me. 88, time to set it straight. Ain't no half-stepping. Dorothy Steele, that's who you just heard from. Name that underdog. Began her acting career when she was 88 years old, and at the age of 92, she landed a dream role of one of the tribal elders of Wakanda in the movie and the big time hit Black Panther. She got the role after she sent her audition tape into Marvel. She said that where she was one of the oldest on the set, she quickly became the grandmother figure to everybody on the set of filming Black Panther. The fact that she was able to see a peak in her career this late in her life is extraordinary. According to a Time magazine article and analysis, women usually see their peak in their acting careers around the age of 30, and men normally around the age of 46. And Dorothy Steele said, guess what? I'm gonna get my swagger back, rediscover my special stuff. I'm gonna check in, I'm gonna build instead of break at 92. Step out. Step up. Shut up. She said, I'm gonna step up. Shout out to Dorothy Steele, who called the movie a comic strip in that clip. I love it. If that don't get you going, I don't know what will. I asked you earlier what you're going to forgive yourself for. And I also ask you, what are you going to go out and do? What are you going to go out and do differently? Dorothy said, I'm going to go out and get this acting career popping. 88, time to set it straight. Ain't no half step. And that's Name That Underdog for episode 81. Shout out to everyone who went along on the journey today. This show wouldn't be possible without you out there listening. Appreciate you. Also the comments. Shout out to Christine and Daryl and all the folks who checked in on the Facebook Live too. And I got to give a shout out to the team. I don't just get to show up and start talking. The stuff that happens behind the scenes. Shout out to Megan, my producer, who helps me get my facts straight, audio clips ready to roll. Wouldn't have a show without you. Appreciate you. And then on the back end, shout out to Kayla. For those of you who will be checking out the podcast tomorrow and throughout the week, whether the audio or the video, shout out to Kayla, my editor, for making me look good and sound good. And if you missed any live show, you can always check out the podcast, live show Sundays, podcast Mondays on popular podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Podomatic, search the Gregory Neesmith Show, or just go to GregoryNeesmith.com or TheGregoryNeesmithShow.com and it'll all pop up there too. And I appreciate all the listeners and just a special shout out to the podcast listeners. This summer, we will cross the 20,000 download mark of the podcast because of you. I'm speechless. It's surreal. I'm excited, humbled. Thank you. With that, I'm going to end today's show with the way I've ended 80 of them up until now. And the 81st will be no different. I'm going to end it with my favorite quote. Say it along with me if you know it. And also, don't go anywhere. If you're listening to the live show right now at 2 o'clock, live drive time live with Lady K is coming up at 2 p.m. like she does every Sunday, bringing it. So don't go anywhere. I'm gonna end today's show with my favorite quote. Say it with me. Underdogs, can't nobody do it like you do it. No. Body. Underdogs, can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody.